Hello, everyone, and welcome back to MilSurp World, the podcast about military surplus. Today, I'm joined by Tom and Danny. Say hello, guys.
Oh, Tom.
Tom, you there?
Yes, I said hey, everyone.
Oh, sorry. It just didn't pick you up.
He didn't hear you.
Tom is one of our Patreon supporters, and if you are a Patreon supporter, you might have the opportunity to come on the podcast and join us sometime. We'll get into that at the end of the thing, because Danny knows all the details on that. I am not as much involved in that. Tom, since this is your first...
You go by Tom or Thomas?
Tom or Thomas?
I think we just started calling you Tom.
Tom works.
Are you sure?
It does, absolutely.
Okay. Tom, if you wouldn't mind going into what got you into MilSurps, and I guess just like a little bit of your history.
Thank you, guys, and thank you for having me. So, growing up, Dad was a Vietnam veteran, two tours, 101st. Grandpa was a... part of the China-Burma theater, part of Merle's Marauder. So growing up on the weekends, we typically went shooting, and I heard stories about, you know, fighting and against the Japanese Marine Division out there. And Grandpa, although he was a medic, he carried an M1 Garand, or Garand. I know that's a hot topic for another day. But just hearing about those stories, along with my uncles growing up fighting, some in the Pacific theater, some in the European theater, I just had that constant, conversations about the 1903s, the M1s against the Mausers. So just this constant hearing of growing up in grade school and high school, and had a little bit of money saved. I said, well, I want to not just learn about the history, but invest into some of it. So I discovered this channel actually as I bought my first MilSurp rifle. It was an M39 about 4 years ago, and I had no idea how to properly clean up the Klausmalin and get the items running. So found one of Danny's old videos. So I learned how to not destroy it or hurt myself there. And one turned into two, turned into learning more about other militaries, including the Swiss. So I picked up, my most recent purchase was a K-11. So it's been a slow collection. I have about six or seven right now. Certainly having a daughter last year has put the brakes on buying a lot, but this year I hope to expand it by one or two more purchases.
I understand the children coming into aspect. My collection has significantly slowed since then.
It's hard to justify a K-31 when you got a 13-month grind for a new toy. So that's where I am right now. But hopefully by summertime, I'll pick up something.
Is that the next one on your list? You want to get a K-31 now since you got the K-11?
I think so. So I got the long rifle version. So it's... I'm on the fence. We went to Zurich actually as a baby moon. We went through Europe and they actually have a restaurant there that was the armory for Zurich. So it's cool. You sit there, it's great beer, great food, and you just look up and there's just crossbows and there's artillery, like light artillery pieces. And they actually had a case of the Swiss Vertoli, the 96, the K-11, and just seeing them all. It's cool. The 1C1 on the wall that you actually own. So then it's, do you try to complete the K-11 part first, which is one purchase, or do you just go the one that's, 150 bucks more, but get the one that's the last in that line, the 31. So that'll probably be the one that I pick up more than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of did the same thing with Swiss guns too. Yeah. You get the one, you start with the K-31. I think most people tend to start with like one of the more common ones and then you kind of work your way back. And that's what I ended up doing. So I got, I have the Vetterli all the way to the K-31. I don't have a K-11, though. I have the G-11, the long rifle, 1911 long rifle. But I'd still need a K-11, but it's hard to justify it when I have a long rifle and the K-31.
Right. Yeah, it's, they're like potato chips. You just can't have one, but it's hard to, it's hard to justify it, like you said.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have 9 M95s. Danny, you also have one that I would like as a Swiss rifle.
Oh yeah, it's probably like the only Swiss rifle that you actually want, right?
Actually, I think that the K-11s and the 1911s are actually kind of neat looking, to be honest. But the Swiss Mannlicher obviously is what I would want.
Yeah, yeah. I call it the K-93, but I guess that's not like the appropriate term. But it's it's the Mannlicher of 1893. So it predates the 95s, but it's very, very similar to the 95s. I have a video about that gun on my YouTube channel for anybody listening that's curious about it. But It's one of the more rare Mannlichers out there.
Is that your rarest piece?
No. It's one of them.
Oh, but I like how we're just going to be humble here. We're not going to bring up the rarest one.
Well, I'm kind of selling the rarest one right now, so.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot about that. Yeah, I got you.
Selling the Ottoman to Gage, so. Yeah.
I'm sorry about that, Danny. I forgot.
Salt in the wound.
I really didn't mean to.
Oh, it's okay. I'm getting a couple cool guns. Like the thing is, on its own, without any rarity, like if the Ottoman or the Belgian captured Ottoman 1893s, if those were like super common, I wouldn't really have any interest in them. Like my interest, it's one of those weird things where like my interest in the gun comes from just like how rare and valuable it is. Like all things being equal price wise, I'd rather have like a German Mauser instead of an Ottoman Mauser. And that's sort of what's happening with it. Gage is trading me a German, it's a 1937 S/42 Mark, so Mauser Obendorf made K98K. And it's actually a depot upgraded gun, so it's kind of neat, and it's all numbers matching. And so I'm pretty excited for that. So it's, I'm getting that and some cash for the 1893. So
nice. Gage has some very rare stuff.
Does. Gage is now talking about humble. Gage is like a super humble guy. He's a really nice guy. I've got to meet him, you know, twice in Maine, and yeah, he just, you know, he has a little gun shop, and it's really nice. And he has a rack, and just in this like front rack, he has his, where anyone could walk up to it and take a look at it. He doesn't have, you know, like a price on it because he's not selling it, but he has some of his own collection like out on the rack. So like people could pick it up and he'll just talk with them about, you know, like his gun. And he just he's really cool and he's passionate about it. But he had his Luxembourg up in the front rack, his Luxembourg Mauser, which is just crazy that like anybody could walk in that shop. Nobody knows what it is, of course, but like anybody could walk in that shop and just pick up like a $60,000 Mauser and not know that they have a $60,000 Mauser in their hands.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite stories of his, where the guy just walked in asking if he could sporterize it for him.
Yeah, and luckily, yeah, Gage knew what it was and worked out for both of them.
It's a very, very, very rare piece. Anybody wants to look that up? Luxembourg Mauser. I think it was like 500.
Yeah, they look. Oh yeah, very, very slim amount. They're very similar to the Swedish M96s. I think they're like the tail end of that contract. But yeah, they kind of, it's pretty much a Swedish M96 with just a different front bayonet lug attachment piece on the end. But yeah, very rare. I don't know how many of them there are. Like there's like five in the world or something. Yeah.
Anyway.
Aggressions.
So do you guys want to get into our topic then for today?
Yeah. So the topic for today is going to be, we're going to all talk about our top five. This is sort of a multi-genre sort of thing. Like they're budget milsurps, but they're also good milsurps for beginners. So these are going to be, I think our rule is, I forgot to mention this to you, Tom. The rule is kind of guns that start around 500 or less that you can get that have a common caliber, or at least that's the rules that I'm had for my list. So everything on here is you can get for 500 or less, and it's a common caliber.
Yeah, I had similar criteria. We didn't discuss the criteria beforehand, but I did a little bit of research into some sold listings and stuff like that. So very similar guidelines.
Sold listings. See, that's the key. You don't look at active listings.
Yes. For those of you that don't know, on GunBroker, you have to create an account first, and you can go into the advanced search section, and you can search for completed listings. That way you can see what's actually selling for what prices instead of what's just listed, because a lot of the times those don't correlate.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those things that's like a pet peeve for me whenever people, you know, pull up GunBroker and they see what people are asking and they think that that's, you know, market price, because there's some pretty crazy people on GunBroker asking some crazy prices for guns. So you have to look at, you know, what's actually sold, and then not, you know, that's not even 100% accurate all the time. So you really have to be, you know, kind of careful and when just trying to find the value of stuff, you know, quickly. But
Well, Tom, would you like to kick us off on the top five, I guess?
Sure, absolutely. And I thought about the same, as you said, the same criteria, because I think budget-wise and new for beginners, I would choose typically an M48 over, let's say, a Lee Enfield, only because even myself, I don't have tremendous experience with the Enfield. Knowing what you're purchasing in terms of the headspace or in terms of any other issues that they may have, just because they were in use for so long. The M48 is typically an easier route to go for someone like myself. Typically, they're in a general better condition. The Mauser model could get that curved bolt, 8mm in common right now. Even now, despite everything that's going on with the Flugaloo or whatever people are calling it, you can't find 5.56 anywhere, but there's 8 different versions of 8mm available on Sportsman's Guide or Cabela's right now. So I think that's a great one. And those you could pick up for about $350, $400 right now, depending on condition.
That's a really good one. I thought about adding that to my list. And it's a good one. But, you know, and being a post-war gun, they're typically in like really good shape when you find them.
Yeah, I was actually considering those as well, but it got edged out by something else on my list. So
that's a really good one. Yeah, the ammo. Yeah. With everything going on, still you can find 8mm Mauser ammo out there. You know, that's still affordable. It's not the most common cartridge, you know, ever, but it's still a lot of countries made it, so there's still, you know, quite a bit out there.
Well, Tom, what's next on your list?
Sure, I'll just fire away. So next, again, especially thinking of price more than anything else, is an SKS. You know, their military surplus, 7.62x39. Again, it's pretty available. And SKS, as you can typically get for, you know, again, right in that $350 to $400 realm, even now. And I believe in just about every state, it's still legal to buy. I live in New Jersey, so we have a ton of restrictions. We can't buy an M1 carbine. That's restricted statewide. So you have to look for items not only that are affordable and they're pretty simple to use, but also something that you can get without any other, you know, legal issues more than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. The SKS, that was my number three. That was my number three. Yeah,
that's a good point.
The legalities are a pretty big plus of the SKS, because there's not, you know, if you live in a restrictive state, you know, it's a semi-auto, it's a military surplus semi-auto that's still, you know, legal. And yeah, 7.62x39 is very, very cheap, very, you know, available cartridge. You can get it from Walmart. You know, it's really, really available. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, bolt actions aren't very fun for everyone. So some people, if they're just going to go shooting, they prefer a semi-auto. So it's good for those people that don't like bolt actions. And being clip, I think the clip loading is interesting. It kind of slows you down while you're shooting. So I think it sort of makes you appreciate kind of every 10 rounds that you shoot a little bit, because you have to reload it. And it just doesn't let you just, you know, blast a lot of ammo like you would necessarily with an AK or something like that. So maybe not from like a combat standpoint, but from just like a modern sort of shooter standpoint, I think the clip loading is kind of a neat feature.
If you think, again, for most people, and again, myself, someone that's newish to this, you're typically going to go to a range. It's going to be 100 yards, maybe 200 yards, and you're going to bring 100 rounds along with 2 or 3 other guns that you go and for an hour, 2 hours. So no, I think it's a pretty decent one to pick up if that's going to be your first, you know, tiptoe into the MILSIP world.
I completely agree. I didn't even consider it, but yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah. And if you wanted to get like, you know, a sporterized like Chinese, you know, variant, like you can, yeah, they're very cheap, because you see them, they're very popular. This case is very popular to be sporterized, which, you know, people typically just put them in like a Tapco stock or some type of plastic stock. And it's pretty common to find them without the bayonets. You know, people take off the bayonets. And so if they're in, you know, in sort of altered condition, they're extremely cheap. They're very affordable.
And let me see, next on my list, I picked the Chilean Mauser, you know, 7mm. It's pretty readily available. A box of 20 rounds goes for, you know, $14 to $16 usually, at least from what I've been seeing. Again, it's everything you read, it's pretty smooth action. And again, if someone's going to get into the MILSIP world and they want something that is, you know, reliable almost to the point of being boring, I think a Chilean Mauser is a pretty safe route to go before you start venturing into some of the other models.
Which model, Chilean?
Oh, I was thinking the 1912 model.
Okay. Yeah, I started actually with an 1895. So I'm not going to disagree with you on that. My first gun was an 1895 Chilean Mauser, and I actually had the 1912 on mine, but a slightly different version. And Danny knows what I'm talking about.
You have the 63, the 1912 63?
I do. So that's the conversion version of the 1912, which comes in 7.62 NATO. And so you have the 1912s are available in 7mm or 7.62 NATO, and they're not that far off in price difference, to be honest.
Yeah, they're when you find them, they're I think they're like $50, maybe less than like a regular 1912 something, but they're not. Yeah, they're not far off in price, as you'd expect.
Now, I found quite a few examples actually sold within the last 30 days on GunBroker for under $350 for both the 1912 and the 1912-63s.
I think that last 30 days, I think that goes with what we were talking about before the podcast. Like right now, stuff is going cheaper. Yeah.
I may change my mind about my next purchase and pick one of those up. The last 308 or 7.62 I bought a couple of years ago was the 1916 Spanish Mausers, because they're going for $170 because they're, you know, just all beat up to hell. I think that next time we speak, I may be holding that one if they're going for $350 right now.
I did see at least three or four listings of the 1912 63s for under $350. Some of them were like at $375, but everything on my list was under $400. And the only thing I verified with was that I had to have at least five examples of it within the last 30 days under $400, and there were multiple examples. The 1912 had the most examples. Actually, no, that's not right. I have another one on my list, but that one is a much more common rifle.
Yeah, you know, I almost had the Chilean 1912 on my list today, but the Chilean 1912 is one of the less common of the 98 action South American guns, just because it was so close to World War One, so the whole shipment didn't get delivered to the Chileans. But yeah, it's a really good one. If it wasn't for that, if there was more of them, if I known they were going so cheap right now, I probably would have added it to mine. But yeah, they're great. I really like the Chilean Mausers. I have a 1912 long rifle. It's really nice, and I have the 1935 Chilean that everyone probably knows by now that I absolutely love. So yeah, they're really nice.
Well, Danny, in the last podcast, you said the 1935 Chilean is the best gun.
It's probably the closest to being like that mythical, perfect bolt action rifle, really. Just laying out like all the features, you know, it's hard to think of any gun as being, you know, perfect or the best, because you have to define what the best is. But yeah, if you listen to the last podcast, I try to go about it in like a logical manner without any sort of emotional attachment. And but Chileans, yeah.
And thanks, guys. So the last one I had on my list, I was on the fence between the Arisaka and the 9611 cane rifle. I ended up going with the Swiss one only because if you're brand new to this world, I think just having a giant rifle that's 120 some odd years old that does take the GP11 ammo, and right now it's going for about 450, 470 ballpark. I think it's a pretty cool introduction to just see what was, and as it got converted from the GP90 to the 11 ammo. I think it's, you know, again, it's a talking point. Certainly the first time you go to a range, you are going to, you know, have a few heads turn to look at you. So it's a pretty neat item to have, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. The 9611, it looks identical to the standard 1911 long rifle. But a lot of them are actually antiques. So for maybe some people in certain localities, or just if, you know, you don't want to necessarily deal with an FFL, you can get an antique, you know, 9611. And versus an Arisaka, yeah, it's a lot easier to find 7.5 Swiss than it is to find one of the Japanese cartridges. So that's a really good one. Have you seen, what's his name? Cap'n Ball's channel. He did a video on the 1911 long rifles.
Him, and some of the larger channels, and then your channel. That's really, again, how I really got into more of the academic side of this, and just trying to learn all the different models and why changes were made. It's fascinating.
Yeah. But Cap'n Ball, it's this. He's a Hungarian guy, and he did a video. I'm looking at it right now. The best military rifle at 660 yards. Which for him is, it seems like, pretty high praise, because he has quite a quite a selection of military rifles that he's shot. But he in the video, he lays down, he gets, he's prone, and he shoots at this target that's 660 yards away, and he hits it his first shot. And he's just like, oh, that's it. but it's a great rifle. They're amazingly accurate. The 1911 rifles have a better like accuracy potential than the K-31s, and the K-31s are already super accurate. So it's very possible that the 9611 or 1911 is probably one of the, if not the most accurate Milsurp rifle available. And like you said, they're under $500.
You figure you get something, you get one of those, grab something new. Actually, where I live, Henry Rifles makes all their 22s, 22 calibers in Bayonne, New Jersey. So you can go out for a couple $100, get something new, and then pick yourself out a K-11, and then you're all good to go.
Nice.
Those are the five that I had, but certainly I'm going to stick around and hear what you guys think.
Yeah, those are a great five. Those are really good five choices.
Some stuff there I didn't think about, for sure.
Yeah. Like I said, you got my number three, so I'm just going to be talking about fourth.
He's got my number two, actually. I had the number two as the 1912.
I don't think any of us want your number two, Aaron.
Oh, well. I told Danny the number one will surprise you.
Oh, yeah, that'll be the clickbait title. Our top five budget Milsurps. Number one will surprise you.
Well, from me, that's for sure. Danny, when you want to go next?
I'll go next. So my number five choice is pretty boring, and I almost hate myself for saying it, but you're probably going to call it. It's the Mosin M91. And I said M91, not 9130, because lately I've been there's quite a few M91s for under $500. And to me, if you can get a standard M91, especially like a finished rebarreled M91, for around the same price that 9130s, go for, then it's just, no brainer. Get the standard, M91 or a finished M91. It's going to be a much, much better quality made gun and, better luck after. Of course, Mosins were a lot of people's first Milsurps. So I think it's pretty good, for this, being a good budget gun. 7.62x54R it's not the most common caliber now. It used to be kind of everywhere for dirt cheap. Any gun store you'd walk in would have a can or two for like 20 cents a round or something. And it's gone up there. I'm not sure what 54R goes for now, but it's still not as expensive as some other, military calibers. So, and being bolt action, you can take a 100 rounds of ammo to the range, and it's going to last you a long time, trying to cycle it through the gun. And it's going to be, very accurate. It's going to be more accurate than probably, most people are capable of shooting. Especially if you get like a Tika rebarreled M91 or something, it's going to be a nice action. And if you live in a fantasy land where the interrupter works 100% of the time, then it's never going to jam. So, there's that going for the M91s.
And you just couldn't do it, could you? You couldn't praise it the entire way through.
I couldn't. I have a review video where me and my wife, we shoot my finished M91, and it jams in the video. So,
well, I agree with you, Danny. It's probably for a lot of people, it's been the first Milsurp rifle. I was a little atypical, obviously, so it wasn't mine, but I have that as my number five, actually, is the M9130, but I also wrote the M44, because I've been looked at GunBroker, and I see completed listings for under $400 for M44s, and that's not Type 53s, the Chinese copies. These are the actual M44s, and I see some 9159s, actually, that went for about $400, too. So, these are all within the last 30 days, so these Milsurps are coming out on the market here. I'm thinking potentially, as we talked about before the podcast, due to this supply being more common because people are trying to sell out to get some money or something else. And I think we're seeing prices start to come down a little bit. I don't want to think it's going to crash, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think they definitely are coming down some now. And who knows how long it's going to last and how low it's going to go. But it's still pretty nice right now how low it is.
I was surprised to see M44s in the under $400 bracket, to be honest. I was expecting to see some Type 53s and stuff like that, but M44s, like, and not even bad condition ones, in good condition, not sporterized. I think the M44 is a good choice too.
It was one of the last gun shows around here. There was a table, and a guy I knew was selling some Milsurps, and he had a Russian M38 Mosin, and he had a 9130, and he wanted $200 for the 9130, he wanted $300 for the M38, and I just stood there for the longest time staring at him like, should I? Like, if it's that cheap. Tom, yeah, there's still some, yeah.
I was going to ask Tom what his opinions on the Mosin were.
And thank you. And Danny, actually, that M44 idea, or Aaron, the M44 is a fantastic idea, because I was thinking, obviously, the 91 or 9130 is like the typical go-to first Milsurp rifle for majority of people. I was just thinking from the beginner person as opposed to a budget person. The beginner person may become frustrated between the bolt and reliability of M44. Say, you know what, I'm done with this world. But the, like you said, the M44, they may have, you know, those issues might be much mitigated while not having to pay the premium of like a finished version, which still does have a sticky bolt on a lot of them. While you were talking, I did find on a store site, you know, Hungarian M44, 90% bluing. It's missing the cleaning rod, but it's $400 right now, and that's point and click and add to the cart right now. So I think that would be a great first one if someone's in the interest of picking it up.
Actually, Hungarian ones are somewhat uncommon. If I remember that correctly, I think that the Hungarian ones, they didn't make a lot of, or they were before they switched over to something else. I think the SKS. Don't quote me on all that. I don't really know for sure.
I can't remember. There's one that's really rare. It's like a post-war one that's sought after Mosin. I don't know much about the post-war Mosins, but
I know the Polish M44s.
Post-war Mosins.
Yeah, the Polish ones are always like immaculate condition because they like built them and then put them in a way. They didn't do anything with them. I've seen a Polish M44 in person, and I thought it was like wrong because of how nice it was. I was like, there's something wrong with this. I've never seen a nicer looking Milsurp, period. That Polish M44 was gorgeous, but the guy wanted a gorgeous price for it. Well, Danny, what would be your next thing?
All right, my next one, this is the gun that I picked over the Chilean, just because I think it's a little bit more common and you can get them cheaper than Chileans usually, is the Brazilians. The Brazilian 98 action, which is the 1908. But there's a bunch of the Brazilians. There's a pretty big variety out there, which is, you know, one of the good things about them. They're pretty cheap. So they're like, there's the 1908 long rifles. I think they made short rifles and carbines of those. And then there's the 0834s. You can find the 0834s in 7mm and 30-06. And then of course the little bit more rare Brazilian Revolutionaries Mauser that you can kind of look up on and come across every now and then. But those are, you can find all those Mauser models for less than 500, you know, being in 7mm, kind of like what you said before, Tom, it's, you know, it's not a very expensive caliber. It is a great caliber. And then, you know, again, you know, 30-06, you can find 0834s and 30-06. So that's, you know, it's pretty common. And it's, yeah, they're very well-made guns. They're, you know, they're pre-war, you know, German-made Mausers are going to be some of the highest quality Mausers out there. So, and it's one of those things where, you know, a lot of people just, you know, think, it's South American. It doesn't have any sort of World War history tied to it. So it's, you know, people don't tend to put a lot of emphasis on them, but they are very high quality, reliable guns, which is why I kind of put them at my number four, but they are very common. I see them every now and then at shows, and I don't, unless they were like a really rare variant, you don't see them for over 500, hardly ever. They tend to be usually more around the 400 range.
Yeah, I think probably the rarest variant would be the Muscafowl. Danny, you know what I'm talking about?
What?
It's Mosquefal. So they made in 1968, they made a Mauser variant which could use the FAL grenade launcher, and had
So
it's like I think the official designation is M968, which is their code. They always have like the first the last three digits of the year. That's like one of the last Mausers ever made, and they made it in-house in Brazil, and it's in 7.62 NATO. That one's really rare in the U.S. because I'm pretty sure they're still used in Brazil, maybe for like police duty or something.
Wouldn't be surprised. You know, you see some really the Brazilian like military and police using some really weird old military surplus, you know, and they're like there's some pretty interesting pictures of like Brazilian police and like the favelas with I'm pretty sure one was holding like a Bren gun, and like that was what he was using. I wouldn't be surprised if they're still employing some pretty old guns.
Tom, you ever run into a Brazilian?
I have not run into a Brazilian Mauser. I'm trying to think of what Dan said, like in gun shows. The only ones, we don't have them here in New Jersey, but we do go to PA on occasion to the shows, and I cannot even think of running into one of those. But it's certainly something to look into.
The best part about them is whenever you find them, they're completely hairless.
Great, Danny. Good work.
Thank you.
What's your next thing, Danny?
Okay, so the number three was the SKS, which we covered. So my number two is going to be the Turkish Mausers.
Can you be more specific?
So I'm going to go with the what do they call them? Like the M38 Turkish Mausers. But there's just a huge variety of Turkish Mausers out there because the Turks, they kind of turned every sort of rifle that they had into their inventory into this one pattern of gun, which is how you have the Enfauser because of the N, the Enfield that's sort of in the Mauser guys. But there's a wide variety of them because they came from all sorts of different guns. You know, they made their, you know, they even turned their 1893s into this 38 pattern. There's carbine and short rifle variants that are a little bit more rare, but you know, some of the cheapest guns that I've ever seen at gun shows were Turkish Mausers. I'm pretty sure I've seen them for like less than $200 at multiple shows. They get a sort of bad rap for being low quality, but a lot of them are pretty high quality made. You know, some of them are German made Mausers. They're an 8mm usually, so it's not hard to find that, like we said before. Very, very, very cheap. It's going to be a pretty reliable gun as long as, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's possible that, you know, you could get one that's pretty rough. There's just no telling kind of what the quality is going to be like.
I would say that I would agree with you. The quality can be very various. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's probably the most boring maybe of all of them, but great for beginners just out of just how cheap it is and how common it's going to be just because, you know, they're not looked at as being, you know, highly collectible. So if you're, you know, really on a tight budget, you know, you want to get your first, you know, military surplus for, you know, less than $200, you know, your best bet is going to be probably with a Turk.
Yeah. Tom, do you run into Turks very much?
Oh, jeez.
Just gonna drop let that go.
Yeah, we'll let that go. Actually, but one actual question related to that is since they're right about the same price and same caliber as the M48, it's really just more thinking of pre-war versus post-war. Do either of you have a personal preference between the M38 versus the M48? In your instance, Danny, do you think the finish and the history behind the Turk M30, it kind of pushed it over the edge for you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That's one of those things where, like, it's up to the individual to see, like, if they would they rather have a little bit more history or would they rather have slightly, like, better condition, better quality maybe gun? Because it's, yeah, the Turk Mausers do have a lot of history behind them, but it's weird because, you know, they are cheap and a lot of people don't seem to care about, you know, all that history behind the Turk Mausers because M48s go for a lot more than the Turks do. So It seems like most people would just rather have a European made Mauser that's in good quality than a Mauser with a lot of history behind it. So if it was me, I mean, like, I've never owned a Turk Mauser. So, like, probably for me, I would be probably more in the M48 camp, because I have owned an M48 before. I don't own it anymore, but I have owned one before.
And I have never owned either one, so I can't say for sure. But personally, I always go for history over condition, and I would probably pick a Turkish Mauser over an M48. I have actually seen an M48 in person, and a couple Turkish Mausers, actually, now that I think about it. And the M48, well, I mean, it was great shape. They're in great shape because they didn't really get used. And, you know, that's kind of like the Polish M44s. But, like, I don't know. It's just, I don't find it interesting, I guess I should
say. So, yeah, there's going to, I'll say it just because there's going to be somebody that's going to try to say that, like, oh, M48s were used in the blah, blah, blah war. Like, yeah, there's probably some, like, a handful of them that were, you know, fielded during some sort of, you know, conflict in the Balkans. But yeah, the great majority of them did just sit in storage. And when you get them in the US, like, they're covered in cosmoline because they were never used. They just made them and threw them in storage. Sort of the downsides with 48s is going to be that it's got the, it has the intermediate length action. Like, it's kind of a proprietary length action. I think FN came up with that length with their 1924. So it's, so you're not going to have exact parts interchangeability with the Yugo M48 and other 98 pattern actions. So that's something to think about.
Should we move on to your last one, Danny?
All right. My number one, you're not going to be super surprised. That is the Swedish M96.
Freaking A. Who would have guessed it?
Yeah. I know. I feel like a broken record, but it is a splendid Mauser for under $500. You can still find them for under $500 typically. You know, depending on the model and everything. Some go a lot higher, like the German made ones go for more, the FSR rifles go for more. But your, you know, more common year Carl Gustav made M96s, you can get them for under 500, you know, pretty easily. And yeah, kind of everything, like I said before, great cartridge. Probably of all the ones that I've listed so far, probably 6.5 Swede is going to be the hardest cartridge to find. But
I was just going to ask,
not impossible.
I don't know.
It's a little bit more pricey. But it's not totally uncommon. You know, everybody knows about 6.5 Swede. So
are we like in 7.65 Mauser territory, or are we like in 7.7 Arisaka territory?
It's more common than 7.65. So
okay. Well, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out based on what I.
It's about in 7mm Mauser territory.
Okay, well, because it was a popular hunting cartridge for a while, right?
Yeah, I mean, companies, they still make rifles in 6.5 Swede, like, to this day. So it's not uncommon. Like, you can go to Cabela's or whatever, and you can find a box on the shelf. And then, you know, there's a lot of Swede Mausers in the U.S. So, you know, there's probably a lot of stores are going to keep it stocked, especially online. You're going to be able to find it for, I'm probably less than a dollar around if you shop around. I'm not sure actually what a lot of the commercial ammo goes for, because I collect and shoot mostly the Swedish, like, military surplus 6.5 ammo that I've kind of hoarded from collecting over the years. But yeah, it's a great action, and it's really neat because it's, you know, right before, of course, the M98 the 98 action. So it has kind of some of the features of the M98, but with the cock on close benefits, if you were sort of in the cock on close camp. So again, just great, super high quality. It's probably, I would say, Swedish Mausers are probably one of the highest quality Milser ever made. It's, you know, it's up there with, like, Swiss guns and everything. Especially if you get into, like, Husqvarna made Mausers, like, those are very well made as well. But yeah, and it's going to be amazingly accurate, you know, kind of along the lines that I said, of the Swiss 1911, you know, a Swedish M96 is going to be, like, way more accurate than the average shooter is. And, you know, you could go to, like, you, if you, if there was a Milsurp shoot, like around you, like a competition shoot at, you know, 400 yards or whatever, you could take an M96. And if you were good, you could probably win. Like, you would definitely not, you know, not be be an underdog at a, at any sort of competition shoot with an M96, you know, as far as accuracy goes. So, yeah, and everyone knows I'm a big Swedish fan. So
Danny's going deep here, guys.
That would be my recommendation, because, you know, I love them. You know, a lot of people, I think once people sort of recognize, you know, the quality and the neat history out there, and two, you know, because, you know, Sweden was never, you know, invaded or anything like a lot of other countries, it's been a very, you know, steady, you know, civilization for the most part. You can find a lot of aftermarket parts or a lot of like military surplus parts for Swede Mausers. So like right now you could go on eBay and you could find like a Swedish, you know, extractor, like in the original box that it was put in when it was put into storage, you know, and just pretty much any part on the gun. Like you could find a brand new, you know, military made part for that gun. So there's not a whole lot of that with other Milsurps out there. There's a lot of really cool accessories and stuff that they made for their Mausers, like brass catchers, you know, front sights. If you get a Swedish Mauser with a threaded muzzle, there's different muzzle attachments that you can, you know, screw onto that, like the blank firing adapter. They're just really neat guns. And, you know, once you kind of learn what all is out there with the Swedes, and, you know, for the price, I just think it's really almost too good to be true.
That was a very thoughtful comments on the Swedes, Danny. Tom, anything to add on the Swedes?
No, I thought about the M96 before the show started, but I actually thought it was like out of the price range. However, looking as Danny's been speaking, no, you can definitely get an M96 right in that $500 range. There's one selling out for $425. The 6.5, actually not surplus ammo, but commercial ammo, a box of 20 is in that $16-$17 range. So it's not much different than modern commercial 7.62x54 ammo. So you might as well, if you're gonna, you know, take 2020, take your $600-$700, whatever it was, the stimulus money, and you want to invest in this, yeah, get an M96, you know, 80 rounds, 100 rounds, and you're good to go with a gun that will outshoot 95% of the people that are shooting it. So it makes sense why it was number one. Like Aaron said, it was not boring, but it was so convincing. It was boring and factual right there. So that was a perfect one for your top of your list.
Yeah, like I said, I was trying to be as impartial as possible, like as non-emotional. But full disclosure, I am a big Swedish fan. So
you need a shirt. We need a Milsurp World Swedish Mauser shirt. Something.
Jeez, I don't know why I haven't made one already. I have a lot of like generic Mausers. I even have the Boer War Mauser shirt, but I haven't done that one yet.
Is there a Swedish? I don't know why I just suddenly went into a weird accent there. Is there a Swedish Mauser crest?
Yeah, well, sort of. There's like the Carl Gustav. My wife used to paint the signs.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I should probably do that. Maybe just put the Carl Gustav crest on the shirt or something like that.
Yeah, that would look cool.
The three crowns is kind of the more common thing. Oh, you can see that in the background of some of the videos.
Yeah, I remember now. Yeah, I remember the ones your wife made. So should we go into mine then?
I guess we should. Should we say something before Tom drops out?
Oh, well, Tom might drop out. He has a daughter he has to go put down to bed. So he might drop out here in a bit. But actually, Danny, with everything you guys have talked about, I only have two left. So if you want to just go through my two real quick, we can probably wrap it up pretty quickly.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do yours.
Tom, you good?
100%. Yeah, I'm interested to hear.
All right, so as we discussed, my top five had a lot of the stuff that you guys already talked about. I mean, a lot of this stuff is going to be very similar. My number five was the M9130s or the M44s. And then number four was the Turkish M38s. And then my number three is actually, I had on here originally the 1895 Chilean Mausers, but then I decided to go a little bit cheaper, actually. And I went with the Spanish 93 Mausers. And now those are typically in 7mm, but as Tom pointed out, some of them were converted to 7.62. But I specifically put on here the 7mm Mauser ones. Those are very commonly found under 350. Now, just like the Turkish Mausers, you're going to run into potential condition issues, so you always want to look carefully through a Spanish Mauser. But the history and the 7mm Mauser cartridge, I think it's just really neat. And I've never had one of these before, but I think it would be neat to have one. Danny, have you ever had? You've had a Spanish 93, right?
Yeah, I have an Oberndorf made Spanish 93. I think it was Lova that made most of the Spanish 93s. But yeah, you can get the earlier ones that are German made, or you can get the later ones that are they started. What's the name of the factory? Oviedo or something? The factory over there in Spain
I can't pronounce it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those are really cheap. I have to say though, if I was probably going to go with a budget Spanish Mauser, I would probably go with the M43.
Now, I would agree with you, and I did look up a couple of different Spanish Mausers, and I could not find a lot of completed listings for the M43s within the last 30 days, so I didn't include it on my list.
Playing it safe.
I would have thought the M43 would have been on there, but I don't know. Maybe just in the last 30 days, there's not been as many sales. My stuff is based on the last 30 days. So it can be a little skewed, I guess, but I think the Spanish 93 is just as interesting. I don't know, though, as much about them. Danny or Tom, I guess, either one of you know, are the Spanish-made ones as good of quality? I would assume not, right?
I don't really know. I probably, from a collector standpoint, like, their Spanish made ones, I think, are less desirable than the German made ones. But you know, when the Spanish signed the contract to get them and for their own domestic product, the Germans probably, you know, gave them the machinery and taught them how to use it and everything. So,
I mean, it was made for probably, military, so it's not like they were going to be super terrible. I mean, you're going to
arm
the military with them. They're not going to explode.
And Spain has a pretty long history of, you know, like, of steel production and, you know, making good stuff. So they might be fine. There's just less, the Spanish made ones are a little bit less sought after, probably just because they're more common than the German made ones. But a 93, you know, it's possible that you could get a very early 93 that, you know, maybe saw action in the Spanish American War, which is a pretty neat angle. But I think some of those, the earlier you get, the more expensive they get. I know my Oberndorf made 93 is definitely wouldn't make the budget list, because, you know, Oberndorf didn't make very, very many of them. But the Spanish made ones are going to be a lot more of a budget.
Yeah, I wanted to include something that was going to be in 7mm, because I had the Chilean 1895. So I was like, well, other 7mm would be super cheap. And I was thinking about Brazilian ones, but I was like, well, what about the Spanish ones? Because I wanted to have something that maybe wouldn't necessarily be on everybody else's list. And the Spanish ones, I think, get overlooked a lot.
Yeah, they do. I see them every now and then. They're not super common, but they are usually pretty cheap. The Brazilian 94s are, I think, like, pretty much exact copies of the Spanish 93. But they're, 7mm Mauser is a great cartridge. But for the person listening that doesn't really know sort of like the difference between the models, I have a video on the Mauser Bolt Action Evolution. You can kind of see the change from the 93 to like the Swede and then to the 98. You know, the earlier 93 does kind of have a couple, I would say it's the 93 is more prone to binding when working the action. So you have to be a little bit more, deliberate whenever you cycle it. But the cartridge, 7mm is fantastic, kind of like we said before.
Tom,
and you know,
oh, sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna say, and I mean, if you wanted to broaden it a little bit more to other Spanish, you can get other Spanish Mausers other than 93s for, you know, for under 500. Yeah. I mean, you can get lucky and get like an FR8 for maybe under 500, and then you have a, you know, 7.62 by 51 shooter, and a real funky sort of configuration. But
no. And
yeah, what do you think, Tom?
FR7.
Oh no, I don't get an FR7.
Tom, what do you think?
It's Well, not 100% familiar with all different models there, but certainly, like you said, there, once you're in that $500 realm, it's, you know, you're debating, as you said, the older you go back, then you're going to pay that premium for the history. If you wanted something that's comparable, like an easy shooter and a common cartridge, I mean, would either of you even go for like the Colombian? Didn't FN make Colombian models in the 1950s? They were in 30-odd six. I think those are usually going for like 500 right now, or someone wants like an easy shooter.
Yes. FN made Colombian 1930, Danny?
Oh, I'm trying to think of when they made them. Yeah, I think sometime in the 30s. Yeah, those are pretty cheap. If you get one in 30-06, the ones that they made in the FN made a lot of Mausers in 30-06 after the war. They kind of switched to it. And those are going to kick a little bit more. The receivers are going to have to be a little bit longer to accommodate the 30-06. A lot of people don't realize 30-06 is a 7.62 cartridge. It's 7.62 by 63. Like, it's really long. It's a really long cartridge. So kind of the you have to work that into the action somehow. So a lot of them, you can kind of tell if like a Mauser's in 30-06, kind of like the Norwegian ones, because they have a little cutout and the bottom of the receiver ring. Yeah.
So FN, it's actually the FN model 1950, one of the last Mausers ever made.
Added to that never-ending list of things to pick up during my lifetime.
That's a huge list of Mausers, man.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, which is, you know, we talk about it a lot, and everybody knows I'm kind of a Mauser fan, but it's just, like, there's no other gun, really, like, bolt-action gun that was adopted by so many countries and made for such a long time, you know, including way after the war. It's hard to, you could just focus on Mausers and collect guns from, like, you know, almost every continent and, you know, for at least a 50-year time span.
Yeah. Well, my number two was the Chilean 1912-61 or 63.
That's a good one.
Now, before we get to the number one, I will say that the M95, if everybody's noticed, is not on this list, and it's not number one. That's because even though the M95-34s and M95-30s can be found very commonly for under $400, the gun itself and the ammunition specifically is not super common, and the gun itself has some quirks to it that is not good for a beginner.
Yeah. It's going to be quirky. And it's not a common caliber at all.
As much as I love it because it's weird. It's a unique cartridge. It's expensive to make it. It's expensive to buy it. And I like, for example, I was talking to somebody the other day that they were having a lot of trouble putting the bolt back together. That's not something you're necessarily going to run into as much with the other ones on this list. So it's like, I can't recommend it to a beginner.
Bolt disassembly is not great for a first-time sort of gun owner, like a beginner getting into it. And then, you know, somebody trying to find 8x56R for sale, you know, or if God forbid they accidentally got one in 8x50, and they're trying to find 8x50 for sale somewhere.
No, and then also we've talked about this before, yeah. Danny, with beginners and heavy recoil. Like, I don't mind the M534 heavy recoil, but with a new person, even maybe sometimes this is their first gun, that's not going to be good. Like, you're going to have a lot of disdain for it because you're not going to want to shoot it very much.
Yeah, probably a new shooter will shoot their M95 carbine, you know, 5 or 10 times and be like, that was enough.
Tom, I don't know. You probably are aware of my love of the M95 by now.
Yeah, no, 100%. I remember in season one of your episodes, one of the parts you talked about were your Siamese Mausers and reloading versus trying to buy commercial, where, you know, box of 20, it's $80 if you're lucky. So, yeah, no, 100%. So I could see why, although that's certainly your number one, it certainly may not be, you know, someone off the street looking at gun broker going, what's going to be my first number one to get into this market.
So
what's your number one, like, advice for the new shooter?
As much as this is going to surprise you, Danny, I will have to say, with a combination of history, ease of finding ammunition, and overall condition of the firearms that you do find, I'm gonna have to say a Lee Enfield number 4 Mark 1. And I was shocked to find as many as I did that were listed as completed under $400. Most of them were right at the $400 range, but I would be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if I raised it to the $500 range like you guys did, if a lot more showed up.
Yeah, you know, when I think about it, I number fours are pretty common. And the markings, you know, especially on the wartime ones, they're not super clear. So a lot of people don't even really know what they have, you know, just looking at one. So it's, yeah, they're a gun that you could find out there for not that much. And
I agree with Tom, what he said earlier about the potential for headspace issues. And while that is a concern, I think there is a lot of good quality Lee Enfield number fours out there that can be found that wouldn't necessarily have this issue right off the bat or ever in the lifetime of the person shooting it, because who's going to shoot it, you know, 3,000 times?
Yeah, there's other issues that you'll run into before headspace on a Lee Enfield and 303. Like one of my first number fours, the extractor broke on it. So I had to research and buy a new extractor and learn how to replace that. So you'll run into some other type of issue with a number four like that before you run into it. But yeah, price wise, you know, if somebody wanted, you know, they're, you know, everyone knows that the Lee Enfields are very, you know, very fast. So if somebody wanted a very fast bolt action with, you know, a nice 10 round capacity, you know, the number four is really good for having those qualities. But yeah, like I said, the issues that people are probably going to run into mostly with them is going to come with the extractor, or like a magazine issue, because there are quite a few iterations of magazines, and, you know, being detachable, it's possible that somebody is going to maybe put the wrong one in that gun, might have an incorrect, you know, magazine for that action. You know, being like, it'll have like an earlier, like Mark II magazine or something instead of like a Mark V. So, reliability issues depending on the magazine. And then, you know, or like say the feed lips are just going to be bent out of shape on a Lee Enfield magazine. So it'll kind of teach you, like it really did on my number four. Like, you know, I was trying to figure out why my first two guns jammed so much. And I had to kind of do a lot of the research on the magazines and kind of figure out like how you kind of have to bend and shape the magazine in order to make it feed more. My number four still gives me issues. I can't figure out how to fix it. I have a long branch that it still jams like on the last round almost every time. Jams like on the first one and the last one almost every time. And I can't figure out how to fix it. But
well, and what's funny?
But yeah, I think it's.
I think it. Oh, Danny just disconnected. Oh, he's back. You okay, Danny? Can you hear us?
Yeah. Sorry, I don't know what happened.
You just decided you didn't want to be a part of the conversation anymore.
Did I leave or something?
Yeah, you actually left the chat.
Oh.
You were so angry that I picked a Lee Enfield that you just disconnected.
Yeah, I know. I love, you know, Lee Enfield. Yeah, I love picking on Lee Enfields. I just had to say this real quick. I love picking on Lee Enfields, but I only love picking on Lee Enfields because Lee Enfield guys are so cool and they deal with it so much better than Mosin guys would. Like the amount of like hate that Mosin guys send my way if I ever like say anything bad about Mosins is like pretty crazy. And Lee Enfield guys just tend to just like, oh, yep, we know. Like,
well,
so
and I'm about to say something.
I like making fun of Lee Enfields, but I like Lee Enfield collectors a lot.
I'm about to say something here. Now, I got really interested in milsurps from video games, specifically World War II video games, and with maybe the exception of a Carcano, the M91s, 30s, Carcanos, and then in terms of cost, the Lee Enfield's the next up on that list, and I think it's the better of the three, the best of the three for sure. Oh, sorry, Tom has to head out. So, Tom, you want to say goodbye?
You want to say something, Tom, before you leave?
Yeah. No. Well, again, just thank you so much for having me tonight. It was a blast, and let's listen out for the after show. Let you two guys wrap up from here. Thank you so much.
All right, Tom, it's good for having you. Well, gladly have you on again.
Thank you.
Well, Danny, and just going back to, I guess, to the point I was making was that the history behind the rifles, the fact
that Are you talking right now? I can't hear you.
You can't hear me at all? Danny? Can you hear me, Danny?
Okay, I can hear you now.
Danny's having issues.
Like right around this time at night, my internet starts giving me issues.
All right, well, I really... I'm not going to diss on the Lee Enfield in this podcast. I actually, really interestingly, Danny, I did find some SMLEs, specifically Ishapur SMLEs, that were under the $400 range too.
Yeah. You know, I'd much rather have an SMLE than a number four. I know like the number four is like technically the upgraded one that they fixed XYZ on, but I like the SMLE much more. I think it just has like more soul to it. And
it's definitely more really interesting looking.
It is, because it's, you know, had such a long evolutionary process. You know, it was one of those guns that they just kept adding stuff to and adding stuff to over the years. So it's kind of got this, you know, interesting appearance. But yeah. I like, well, you know, one of my favorite guns like to shoot is my Lithgow SMLE. They're fun.
I think they're good. I know there weren't very many SMLE completed listings, so I didn't include it on the list. But I did find a couple Ishapur SMLEs for about $350, $375, which surprised me. Is that just because it's Ishapur?
Yeah, I think so. I think any of the other Commonwealth like makers of SMLEs are gonna run more. But yeah, the Ishapurs and the Indian Enfields just tend to go for a lot less. I mean, you can get lucky. You could find like a 281 for, you know, for under 500 as well.
Well, I think
that wouldn't be a bad one.
Did that surprise you, Danny?
For the number one? What?
My choice for number one.
Yeah, you know what it did. I didn't expect it.
I was thinking, they still can't be that expensive. And to sit there and go, would I rather pay $350 for an M9130 or like $400 for a Lee Enfield number four? I was like, I'd rather have a Lee Enfield.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would take a number four over a 9130. Like, yeah.
And, you know, yeah,
10 times out of 10.
I'm just like, in terms of the history and the reliability and just the gun overall, I was like, yeah, I'd rather have a Lee Enfield in this case.
Yeah, they're interesting, you know. Reason for like the British, you know, switching to the number four, you know, is kind of the whole Dunkirk thing and them needing to rearm their arm, you know, military really, really fast and needing something that's a little bit more cost effective than the SMLE. But yeah, it seems that the British, like most other any other British gun you could think of, is going to go for a lot more than British made number fours. Those are, yeah, you can still find a pretty good deals on them.
Well, I just sat there and I just couldn't argue with myself that it wasn't my best choice.
Like I said before, it's got all the qualities that, you know, that the Lee Enfield guys love about their guns. It's got the, you know, the 10 round magazine and, you know, the fast, you know, short bolt throw. There's some really good qualities about the SMLEs.
The round isn't super expensive. It doesn't have a huge amount of recoil in the SMLE or in the number four.
And like Othaya said, you know, you have to give Lee Enfield credit. They're almost as strong as a Krag.
Oh, you couldn't do it. I'm praising him. I'm trying to be nice. You couldn't do it. You couldn't just let it go.
Oh, man, that was just too, that was too good.
That was easy picking.
When Othaya said that. Yeah. Thing Othaya said it, and then Bloke on the Range was typing a reply. That was too good.
I think he posted that on his Instagram or something. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Well, I think we finished our topic.
Yeah, I guess that's it. This is kind of record time for us to have talked about everything. Oh, I was going to do an honorable mention. I don't know if you have an honorable mention.
Yeah, sure. I don't have an honorable mention. I mean, the M95 is my honorable mention. I just can't justify it being a beginner milsurp.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You know what? Honorable mention for me, for a good beginner is probably going to be, it's sort of boring, a boring honorable mention. Just a Comblock handgun, you know. There's just a large, you know, just a plethora of like, you know, post-war Tokarev variants and Makarovs and all that kind of stuff. Like there's too many to not talk about. Like I tend to just collect rifles and focus on rifles, and I kind of forget that there's this large milsurp market out there for, you know, for Comblock handguns and stuff. So and those, you know, very commonly under $500, you know, if they're in 7.62x25, it's not going to be like the, you know, cheapest, you know, necessarily to shoot, but cheap gun to own. And you know, maybe if for whatever reason, you know, you can own a few handguns, but you couldn't own a few rifles because of, you know, like space constrictions or something, you know, those might be really good choices for people too.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't really focus on handguns because it's not something that I have much of an interest in. But yeah, it's definitely, it's a big section that we don't necessarily talk about in this podcast a lot because neither one of us have a huge interest in them. But yeah, there's definitely a huge market for those that out there for sure.
Yeah. And Makarov guys are some of like the most enthusiastic Milserv collectors out there. And there's a pretty big variety from a lot of different, you know, countries. You can get an East German Mac. A lot of Tokarevs. It's kind of cool because it's, you know, based on the Browning. The VZ-52s, you know, it's got that really interesting, you know, mechanism. Just a lot of neat pistols out there.
Yeah.
And that's the honorable mention.
Yeah, for sure. I think we're good. Are you done for the night, Danny?
I guess so.
Are you done singing the praises of Swedish Mausers, or is that never going to stop?
Ah, man, I love them. But I just think I like them for all the reasons why I said that. I just, trying to take my emotions away from this as much as possible, I still think they deserve like the number one spot coming from me. So,
which is surprising to me. For the best overall gun, you ended up with a Chilean Mauser versus a Swedish one. I know the reasons why, but.
Oh, yeah. As far as underrated. So underrated, yeah, Chilean 1895s are vastly underrated.
No, I'm sorry.
I don't think Swedish Mausers.
Danny, I was referring to the Chilean 1935 that you picked for the overall best Milserv.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was surprised at that versus a Swedish rifle. I think the issue was that the Swedish rifles never had curve bolts.
It's because the 38s, they don't have a side sling and they don't have a semi pistol grip. And I just sort of feel a little bit that the 98 action just have a few good features over the Swedish Mauser action. So that sort of steer me towards the Chilean. And then, oh, also the built-in front sight protector is really nice. You know, there are front sight protectors that you can put onto a Swede, but I always feel like a front sight protector that's built into the gun is going to be a little bit more robust and, you know, protect the sight maybe a little bit better than like a thin sheet of, you know, stamped steel that you would put on the front sight. So yeah, like I said, which I guess maybe that's, you know, maybe that's me separating my emotions from what I think is the best gun, because, you know, I love Swedish Mausers the most, but I don't think they're the best, you know, bolt action or the best Mauser out there necessarily.
All right. Well, thank you all for coming and listening to us rant about Swedish Mausers. Just kidding. And hope you all had an enjoyable time, and we'll catch you on the next podcast.
And thanks again to all of our Patreon supporters. Tom, that was on the show today, he was one of our first Patreon supporters. He's been pretty much like our biggest supporter over on Patreon. And it's those people over there is why you're listening to this podcast right now. It's the reason why our episodes are still up and available online. It's thanks to everyone that supports us on there. And like I did a post on Patreon for our patrons to see it, but I'll say it here too. You know, if you can't support us right now, I know everyone's going through a tough financial time. If you can't support us on Patreon right now, that's fine. And if you no longer can support us, if you are a patron, you no longer can support us. I completely understand if anybody needs to pause their support of us, or if maybe if you wanted to support us and you just can't because of your finances right now, that's fine too. So, I just don't want people to think that we're just after the money. Pretty much we're fully funded. So I think I'm okay where we are right now.
All right. Well, thank you all and have a great night.
Thanks, everyone.